If you had the option of either a good book or a good film, which one would you go for? Put your hands up for a good book. Yeah, quite a few. And put your hands up for a good film. And put your hands up if you just didn't vote. And a few of you just didn't vote, yeah. I don't believe it. Some people always want a happy ending. They always want the prince to meet the princess. Anyone always want a happy ending? Yeah? Or sometimes, I don't know if it's like our kind of Netflix generation now, but I don't know about you, but if you watch a film or a series, for me, if the first 5 minutes don't grab me, I'm kind of looking Becky and thinking, nah. And sometimes there's a middle part and it's like, oh, is this ever going to end, or you never want it to end. And my favorite film is Braveheart. I love Braveheart. Actually, when I was 18, my birthday party was a fancy dress party, and I dressed as William Wallace. So, but that was the first film I think I've seen where the ending wasn't good. Like, I was kind of like, I was waiting for, has anyone not seen the film? Spoiler alert, please close your eyes, okay? Yeah, when he's kind of like, when William Wallace, this guy, ends up being killed, I'm kind of just waiting for it to be all a joke. And then like, I was about 11, I think, and I just started crying watching this film as my hero has died. Today we're going to look at a story which has got the verses have got like this beginning, middle, and end. And you've got Peter in there who has a brilliant start, like nails it, reveals something that's for the first time. His middle part, he ends up being called Satan. So that's a pretty bad middle, isn't it? Like, that's not a great middle part. And then the end, then, Jesus talks about what it means to be a real disciple, and almost like a cliffhanger. Some people get it and want to go more. Other people walk away. So that's the story that we have today, and it's in three parts in this book of Mark. And as Kathy read it, it says, so this is the beginning part. It says, Jesus and his disciples went to the villages around Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked them, who do people say I am? So he's with his disciples, his friends, and so he's saying, they've been around a while now, they've been healing people, teaching people, doing amazing things, so who do people say I am? And if you ask today people, like, who is Jesus, or if you Googled it, you've probably got about 10 options then. You've got like a prophet, you've got a good guy, a moral teacher, an angel, a messenger from God, the son of God. You've got a swear word. You've got Satan's brother. Some people believe that as an angel. And so like you've got about 10 different options of like who people today believe Jesus is. But he asked his disciples, who do they say they are? And they replied, some say John the Baptist. We looked at John the Baptist a few weeks ago, and Herod, who got him beheaded, thought John the Baptist had raised from the dead. So some people thought Jesus was John the Baptist who'd been raised from the dead. Others say Elijah. Elijah was an Old Testament prophet that never died, and so God took him. He didn't have a gravestone, and so they thought Elijah has come back, and so Jesus is Elijah. And still others say one of the prophets. And so he asked this question, and you can kind of imagine him walking with them, oh, so who do you say that? And they're saying this. And you can almost imagine him then just kind of stopping and look at them and kind of saying, like, all right then, but who do you say I am? So he asked this generic question with his friends as they're walking, and then he kind of eyeballs Sarah and says, like, all right then, but who do you say I am? And you can just see like this silence, like this awkward silence around, and just kind of waiting, like, who do you say I am? And Peter, like, nails it. So he says, who do you say I am? And Peter nails it. Peter, he's one of those guys who's got, like, kind of a big mouth. He always kind of talks. Sometimes he gets it really right. Sometimes he gets it really wrong. In this part, he nailed it. And he says, you are the Messiah. which means, and then Matthew's account says this, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Like, until that point, no one had said it. These guys had walked with Jesus, and he'd done amazing things. A few weeks ago, we looked at him walking on water and then coming into the boat, and these guys are like, who is this guy? Like, who is this guy that the wind and the waves obey him? Like, they're still trying to work out who Jesus is. Like, and he's seen all these amazing things, and they didn't fully grasp it. They followed Jesus, but they didn't fully know who he was. But then he says, Peter says, like, all right, I'm willing to take a punt on this. I'm willing to put my hand up and say, like, you are the Christ. You are the Messiah. So all of the Old Testament, the one that it's all been talking about, like, that's you. And not only that, he says, you are the Messiah, and the Messiah actually is the Son of the living God. He's saying, you are the Messiah, and you've revealed to us that the Messiah is the Son of the living God, and that's you. And Peter is saying, like, that is you. And Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. It often says this, even last week, we heard about a deaf and mute guy, and he said, don't tell anyone. And what do you do? Like, when you tell a child not to do something, they kind of really want to do it then. So he told them not to do it because he said his time had not yet come. But who do you say I am? I think this question, and we did it in Alpha actually last week, the question, who is Jesus, is the most important question in this world. Who is Jesus is the most important question you will ever be asked. Because not only does it affect your life now, but it also affects eternity. Like, your answer to who is Jesus not only affects life right now, but it affects your eternity. And we can give, like, a Sunday school answer, can't we? Like, if you ask people in the UK, they might just say, oh, yeah, Jesus, you know, he's that Son of God, or he's the one who died on the cross. And so we might know the answer theoretically, but Peter here, this almost like came out of his heart. It came from his heart and it came out of his mouth. And Romans says, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart, and that you have that, you have to have that twofold, that belief in your heart that almost just comes out of your mouth, rather than I'm just going to say this because I know it's the right answer, or because you want me to say it, even though I don't know where in my heart. And so if you're here today and you don't know who Jesus is, and you don't know, you might know the correct answer, but you don't know where in your heart, like, we would love to pray with you. We would love to speak to you. We would love to walk you through what that means. Because he also says, like, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection. I am the light of the world. And we want that for everyone, because it doesn't just affect this temporary life, but it affects our eternity. If we know him, we can have eternal life with him rather than eternal separation from him. And so Peter nails it, doesn't he? And you kind of think, full stop, like, that's the end of the story. But then it goes on to this then. And so he then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and must be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed. He spoke plainly about this. So he'd walked with them for a while. He'd been with them. He'd been teaching them things. They'd been seeing him. They'd been living with him 24/7. This isn't just like Sunday morning, hour and a half, or home group. Like, they're with him 24/7, all the way with him. And Peter has come to realize that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And now things start to change. Things start to change. And he says he then began to teach them. So he's like, okay, these guys get a bit more now. Like, my time is coming. And so he begins to teach them about something that's going to happen. For some people, they kind of think Jesus is going to kind of lead them against the Romans. Judas, one reason why he got fed up with Jesus is because the money issue, but also he wanted them to lead and be kind of a political leader and kind of a king against the Roman people. But then all of a sudden, Jesus is then teaching these guys that actually he's got to suffer. It says there, Son of Man, that was kind of the phrase that Jesus used for himself mostly. It doesn't mean that he's not the Son of God. The Son of Man comes from two books, Ezekiel and Daniel, and they're hints towards the identity of that. But he's now saying to these guys, okay, great, yeah, I'm the Messiah, I'm the Son of the living God. They might be thinking, okay, great, so Jesus, when are you going to rule? Like, when are you going to bring your kingdom? Like, when are we going to kind of be with you and be the top guys and lead? And all of a sudden he changes and says, actually, I've got to suffer. Like, now that you know who I am, I've got to suffer. Also, I'm going to be rejected by the elders, the priests, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. So all the main guys, all the religious leaders, all these people, other people, I'm going to be rejected by them. And then I'm going to be killed. So I'm not going to just die of old age or something wrong with me. I'm going to be killed by people. And it says he spoke plainly about this to them. And so, like, this is their friend, isn't it? Like, this is the one, their rabbi, their follower, someone that they've given everything up to. And now he's saying he's going to suffer, he's going to be rejected, and he's going to die. He's going to be killed, and he spoke plainly about them. And the reason why I put the line through there is because they almost didn't hear that bit, did they? Like, they didn't hear this bit. They kind of heard everything else, but they didn't hear this bit. The fact that it says, and after 3 days, I'll rise again. It's almost like they didn't hear that part. Like, that's an amazing part, isn't it? That's an amazing, like, kind of, oh, wow, like, all right, you're going to go through all that. That's going to be horrific. That's going to be terrible. But you're going to rise again. Like, wow. But they didn't hear that part at all. They didn't understand that. They didn't get that. And 700 years before this, in the book of Isaiah 53. This is an amazing verse. And so this was 700 years before. So Jesus had told them he's got to suffer, he's got to be rejected, and he's got to be killed. And in Isaiah chapter 53, so again, like I said, this is 700 years before what we're reading right now in Mark. Look what it says here. And actually, I saw a YouTube video the other day, and you've got these guys who go to Jewish people and read a portion of the Bible, and they've got to ask the Jewish people, where they ask, they've got to say what book it's in or where in the Bible it's found. And every time these people read Isaiah 53, everyone said it's the New Testament. Everyone said, oh, that's one of your Jesus books. Like, that's one. Like, they didn't know it was Isaiah. They didn't know this. So 700 years before, this is what it says, and we believe Jesus fulfilled this. It says this in Isaiah 53. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hid their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Truly he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. And the punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, yet who
of his generation protested. He was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people, he was punished. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. Though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made his intercession for the transgressors. Amen. Those words are massively powerful, massively painful words that, if you think about it for someone else, is so hard. But for us who have known the forgiveness of sins and all that Jesus has done for us, it just makes you feel gratitude, doesn't it? Like that he would do all this for us. And also, like we're going to sing a song at the end, like he chose to do that. Like, in a weird sense, he did that because he loved us. Like, he chose to do that. Like, that was his will. It wasn't like the Father twisting the Son's arm and the Holy Spirit saying, go on, go on. Like, this was God willingly doing it for us. Like, he chose the cross for us. And this guy, and he tried to speak, he started speaking plainly to these guys about it. But obviously, if you're his friend, and if you've got a friend and someone says, even if they're going to go to hospital or they're not very well, our inclination is to try and support them, try and see something positive, isn't it? Try and change the story. And Peter, who had just nailed it and called him the Christ, the Son of the living God, maybe he was on a bit of a high. This is the next part of the story. And then Peter took him aside. So he took him away from the others, and he began to rebuke him. Jesus had just said this, and Peter just began to rebuke him. He says, never, Lord, he said, this will never happen to you. Like, he's basically saying, over my dead body, like, no one is going to touch you. Like, no one's going to harm you. Like, me and the guys, like, we've got you. Even though it's like there's 12, I'm like thousands in the Roman Empire. Like, we've got you. Like, no one's going to touch you. Like, we would never, ever let anyone harm you or reject you or kill you. Like, no way. And you can see almost like how Peter has done something from a good heart, out of good intentions, but he's got it completely wrong. And we do that sometimes, don't we? Sometimes we do things from a good heart with good intentions, but sometimes we just get it genuinely wrong and we need to hold our hands up to that. And so Peter does this with Jesus. Then it says, but when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he then rebuked Peter. One theologian says, why did he look at the disciples? Like, was he kind of just embarrassing Peter? Was he kind of wanted to shame Peter? He was saying no. Because Peter was often their spokesman, he said probably all of them were thinking that. They were kind of all thinking of that because he was spoken. So he wanted to kind of say to them all what he wanted them all to hear what he was going to say. And these are like really strong words, aren't they? Like, I've been called lots of things in my life, mainly by Theo, actually. But thankfully, he hasn't used this S word yet. but Peter says, "Get behind." Jesus says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan."
like, get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but meanly human concerns. Like, get behind me, Satan. And they're really strong words, aren't they? Like, powerful words, upsetting words, aren't they? Like, kind of, what do you do with that? And my take on this, anyway, is Jesus is speaking out of what Peter has said, rather than calling Peter Satan. Like, Peter had already changed Peter's name once. He changed him from Simon to Peter. He's not that when he's saying, oh, I've got it wrong, actually your name is Satan. Like, he's not saying that, but he's saying what Peter has said is basically saying, Jesus, you don't need to go to the cross. That's what he's saying. Jesus, you don't need to go to the cross. And that is Satan's ultimate tactic, is to say, oh, you don't need to go to the cross. You don't need to die for people. You don't need to do anything with their sins. And for us today, it's still the same. The enemy is saying, why would you trust a cross? Look, it's empty. It's nothing. There's no power. Like, why would you trust a dead guy who lived 2,000 years ago? Like, that doesn't make sense. And the enemy is continually trying to take Jesus and also us away from the cross. It's a Christianity without the cross, which doesn't mean anything. There's no power there. There's no meaning there. And so Jesus wanted to explain to Peter and the disciples, like, I choose the cross because that is my greatest gift to you. Like, you need that more than you can think. Like, you need me to go to the cross. And I willingly go to the cross for you because your sin problem is bigger than you think. And so you don't have in mind the concerns of God, but meanly human concerns. And just as I was studying this in this week, and maybe right now, maybe you haven't heard a word I've said because your mind is somewhere else. Or maybe you just had a difficult week or in a difficult situation, and your mind is consumed. But think about this. Is your mind consumed with godly things or human things? Like, what is taking up your mind right now? What are the things that are absorbing your mind, that are kind of demanding its attention? Is it the human things, or is it God's plan and God's way? And because we're human beings and we're fallen and sinful, we'll naturally think of things, won't we? When the Bible says, do not worry, what do we automatically do? We worry, don't we? Like, that's kind of like our default. But it's kind of like, the Spirit of the Lord is in us, and because the Spirit of the Lord is in us, like, we can think differently. Like, we can think differently. We can live differently. For Peter and the disciples, they're like, oh no, Jesus, you're only 33. Like, you've got a long way to go. But Peter says, like Jesus said, it is good for me to go, because when I go, I'll send the Comforter. I will send the Comforter. And the life that we have right now, although it's great and we want to fill it with family and friends and football and food and everything else with F, that's good, holidays, that's not F, but all these things that are good, we recognize that this life is temporary. Like, that this is temporary, and God cares about our temporary life. He came and died for us, and there's things that he helps with us in our temporary life, but for us to realize what is God concerned with in my life right now, and am I placing temporary things over eternal things? Like, eternity with him. And so just to think, and if you're struggling with that right now, maybe I pray for
Ask someone to pray for you. Just pray for your mind. Lord, just help my mind, Lord. Help you say, to have the mind of Christ. Please take over my mind as well. Help me not absorb it with temporary things. You see my fears and my struggles, or even just the rhythm I've got myself in. Please, Lord, touch my mind. Give me the mind of Christ. Help me be absorbed with the things that are unseen, the eternal things. I give you my mind and pray you will touch it again, Lord. Amen, God. We are in Mark chapter 8, thank you. That is a good hint for the next one. Pip obviously wants me to move on. That is a good hint, Pip, thank you. You're giving other people ideas now, though. But then it says this in verse 34. This is the final part. So that was the start, beginning, and then the end. And notice how as well, like in you've got the life, the death, and the resurrection in this beginning, middle, and end. It says this, and then he called the crowd. So this is interesting. He's with the disciples. He has a one-on-one with Peter. He talks to them, then he calls the crowd with his disciples. And then he says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up the cross and follow me. He doesn't say, like, whoever wants to go to heaven. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple. If you ask people in the street, like, do you want to go to heaven? 10 out of 10 want to go to heaven, don't they? Like, everyone wants to go to heaven. I read in a book this week, loads of people want to go to heaven. They just don't want God to be there. Because they want their lives. They like aspects of God, but they don't think he's very moral. So lots of people want heaven. They just don't want God to be there. But he's not saying this. He says, whoever wants to be my disciples, whoever wants to follow me, whoever wants to be like me, walk like me, it says this then. It says, must deny themselves, number one, take up their cross, number two, and follow me. That's pretty big, isn't it? Three big things there. And it says, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it then for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, so the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with his holy angels. And so you've got a great beginning, you've got a weird middle, and then this end, he's kind of saying to the disciples, all of them, look, I'm going to the cross, and if you want to be my disciple, like, this is what it means. This is what it means. And it says, be ashamed of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation. And for us as Christians, like, the Bible is not all politically correct. The Bible is not all things that people are going to like or accept or vote on or be a friend on. And we've got to have wisdom in how we use that, but for us 2,000 years on, like, are we ashamed of his words? Like, in our hearts and our lives, like, the things that he said, we need to be careful not to be ashamed of his words, to say, look, this is what we believe God said, and we believe this is true. Because he says, if you're ashamed of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, he's basically saying, like, what we think, oh, we won't share that because that might get us in trouble or because they won't like that. And when we do that, we say, actually, this sinful generation is more holy than God, is more moral than God, is more right than God. So we won't say God's words because these people won't like that. But actually, he's saying this is a sinful and adulterous generation, and so don't be ashamed of my words. And then it says, and the Son of Man, because then the Son of Man will be ashamed of them if we are,
when he comes in his Father's glory with his holy angels. So at the beginning, you've got Jesus' life. Then you've got Jesus' life, that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. Then Jesus says he's going to suffer and be rejected and killed. You've got the resurrection. And then at the end of the story, he's saying, like, he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. He's coming back again. Like, we believe that there's resurrection because Jesus has rose from the dead. And so if we die in this earth, we believe because of Jesus that we will be with him. But for some people, they're not going to see death. They're going to see Jesus coming back. And we don't fully know what that looks like. We can't fully understand, but we believe that Jesus is coming back. And so for both of us, whether our trust is in him or whether we're walking in him, like, the story can be good. It's not a William Wallace ending. Like, we can have a good ending with this if our trust is in Jesus. Then it says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And so the beginning of the story, like, who is Jesus? If you don't know Jesus, like, who is Jesus? We'd love to talk to you. The middle of the story, like, is our minds conformed with God or the things of this earth? Like, we'd love to pray, and if you need more prayer for that. And just a bit more of a challenge maybe for people who've been walking with Jesus for a while. Like, what does denying yourself and taking up your cross and following Jesus look like today? Like, what does that look like in your workplace right now? In your life right now? I don't know about you, but I've found kind of weirdly, the more I deny myself, the better husband I am, like, the better father I am, the better follower I am. Because the more I deny Matthew Hopkins, the more I become like Jesus. So the more I deny myself, but also taking up my cross, like, Matthew Hopkins inherently is a selfish guy. I'm a proudful guy. I like things my own way. I like my wife making me a cup of tea when I'm being lazy. Sometimes. All the time. So I kind of like it when life goes for me. So carrying my cross and serving others is kind of goes against my natural kind of thought. But because the Spirit of God is in me, he gives me a desire to serve others. And so I want to carry my cross and do that. And then follow Jesus while listening to him. What does he want me to do today? Who does he want me to speak to? 20 years on of following Jesus, I'm still a sinful guy. I'm still messed up. I'm still trusting the cross. But I'm still looking every day, all right, Jesus, who can I speak to for you today? Who can I try and share you today? Who could I pray for today? Please, God, use me, even though, you know, I'm not perfect. Please, God, use me today. And so, who is Jesus? The band are going to come up now and sing. We're going to sing this final song, He Chose the Cross. With every breath, the perfect life, the perfect death. But before we sing that, maybe just ponder on this question and maybe think of what question is for you, and whether you want to ask the person next to you for prayer, or if you want to come down the front during the last song for prayer, or in the cafe, or maybe just for yourself. Like, how do we put what we've heard into action? So maybe just pray for yourself right now.